This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We got a bunch of guests coming up, not only this hour, but also hour number three, the Power Hour. So we're going to be busy, busy, busy between now and 10 a.m. But, Wes, we let off about Florida State and the Noles yesterday being in the news. And Irish FL has joined us many, many times on the program. The guy knows about everything you ever wanted to know about the Florida State athletic world. And with that said, we bring him on. Ira, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We are good. And, boy, there's always something to talk about. But yesterday was certainly a busy, busy day in Tallahassee.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it was totally unexpected, not all the pieces of it. But certainly, you know, if you look at it on the surface, you know, it's three of the biggest names in Florida State football, Tamari and Terry, Marvin Wilson, and James Blackman. Even though they haven't had big impacts this year, they've been synonymous with Florida State football the last few seasons. So for all of them to be out for this year and basically the end of their careers, it's certainly certainly big news, even though I don't know if it has a huge impact on this week or next week.
Ira, that's where I was going to go with this, because I don't think there's any doubt Wilson's been an incredible leader for the program, right? Clearly came back as one of the two or three key defensive players on this team in 2020. You know, and now staying connected with the program but not playing, both he and Devontae Love Taylor fall in that category. The Blackman transfer situation kind of says to me that there's going to be, whether it's Jordan Travis, Chuba Purdy, or somebody we don't know, one of those guys is going to be the quarterback at Florida State, not only the remainder of this year with those two, but next year as well.
Yeah, and that's why I said it. None of it was totally shocking, because it was trending in that direction. You know, James Blackman lost the starting job early this year, you know, against Pitt late in the game. They went to Chuba Purdy, a freshman, when Jordan Travis, you know, James went in briefly. Then they went to Chuba Purdy for the rest of the half. You know, James, you know, he's had an unbelievably difficult situation at Florida State. He comes in under Jimbo Fisher as a project. We thought it was going to take a couple of years before he could even contribute. Gets thrown into the starting lineup. And then the rest of his career is one new offensive coordinator, one new quarterbacks coach every season. So he's never really had a chance, and I think that's unfortunate. And I do think Mike Norvell feels bad about it. But if you were there, you know, if you watched that game Saturday, and I know you called it, watching that situation play out where he goes in the game, gets booed, throws a pick on his second pass, gets booed again, I just don't know how it was tenable for him to go back into a game for Florida State again. So I think it's best for everybody that he gets a fresh start, even though from an optics standpoint, it looks bad when a guy leaves during the middle of a season.
Ira, how would you describe the temperature? And I don't mean, hey, pack it 68 degrees and sunny, but this has been the last couple years of Florida State football where it's been a struggle. I mean, the tail end of Jimbo Fisher, all of Willie Taggart, and obviously Mike Norvell with what he inherited, not having a spring, not having a summer, a pandemic. I mean, it's almost like the perfect storm in some respects. So what's the mindset of a Florida State fan base that understands, hey, we can potentially be great when everything's right, but right now it's a struggle? Where's the fans at this point in time?
Mostly really angry. I think that's probably the common thread. You know, look, Florida State fans, even though this has been several years now of struggles, they haven't been a good football team really since probably 2015, 2014 maybe. So it's not like a new phenomenon. But for Florida State to be 2-5, it's only happened three times in the last 45 years. Coach Bowden's first season in 1976, they started out 2-6. And Jimbo Fisher's last season, they started out 2-5. The fifth loss was that blowout at Boston College, where it was really a very evident sign that things were not going to turn right back around under Jimbo Fisher. And then this season. And so the problem for Mike Norvell is, you know, Jimbo had already won a national championship at that point. The program had had success. Mike Norvell comes in. He's never coached at the Power Five level. So now everybody is analyzing every little thing, everything that goes wrong, every decision that goes poorly. So there's a lot of doubt right now whether or not he's the right guy. I'm encouraging people to give it some time. I mean, the difference between Willie Taggart, his regime, and this regime, in my opinion, is that behind the scenes, you weren't hearing the things you wanted to hear. People around the program weren't seeing the things they wanted to see that indicated things are going to turn around. So right now, I would encourage people to not worry so much about the record and take some solace in knowing that people around the program feel like things are going in the right direction, even though it's not reflected on Saturdays.
Ira, here's the thing, though, and, you know, Mark and I have talked about it. This is a landscape of college athletics where a brand name is fighting through it, and there's no other way to talk discuss it. They're fighting through some of the transitional pieces you just spoke of, from the end of Jimbo Fisher, the 18 months of Willie Taggart, and now Mike Norvell. There's a lot of things contributing to the predicament they're in. And you know this better than any of us, misses probably in recruiting, misses in evaluation, misses in coaching staff elements, things of that nature. And now, oh, by the way, factor in, I think, what you told us either your last visit or the one prior to, there's a financial situation here where, quite frankly, you don't have any choice but to be patient if you're a Florida State fan.
Yeah, and look, the reality is the idea of recycling coaches every year or two doesn't work anyway. Even if they had the money to do it, it's not a path to success. Nobody just fires and hires coaches every year or two and finds the success they want. So I don't think that's a good strategy anyway. But yeah, to your point, Florida State is strapped financially, but they were strapped financially when they fired Willie Taggart. I mean, I made the case that they didn't have the money to fire Willie Taggart, and they went ahead and did that. Yeah. So if things go poorly next year, and if the behind-the-scenes things are not going in the right direction, then, yeah, I wouldn't say it's out of the question that they make a move again, because, no, they don't have the money, but they didn't have the money to do it last year. And at some point, you know, you're just – these are almost fake dollars. You know, whether you're $30 million in debt or $50 million in debt, they're going to do whatever they have to do to get people to go to games. But, you know, clearly they have to show some progress next season.
Ira, the sense, though, is, and I got the sense from talking to Coach and his coordinators and staff last week, things are, behind the scenes, they're putting together what looks to be a pretty sturdy program. I think there was some expectation that it was going to be bumpy along the way, but they're always talking about getting better even through adversity. Clearly they're trying to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're taking the right approach. And I think, you know, one of the interesting things I thought this week was, you know, Kenny Dillingham, the offensive coordinator, and Adam Fuller, the defensive coordinator, both admitted for the first time that I've heard that, okay, it's not everybody is bought in. You know, we're not going to try to tell you that every kid is 100% believing in what we're doing, but most of them are. And that's going to be the key right now. They've got to figure out which kids are part of the future and which kids are not. And I think that's kind of what you saw with the announcement yesterday with Tamari and Terry. I just think that they felt like, whether it was totally Tamari's choice or Mike Norvell's choice, the belief was he wasn't going to be part of the turnaround. And that's what I think they're going to do right now. I think I won't be surprised if you see a few more guys leave, whether it's during the season or after the season. But part of that process is identifying the guys who want to be part of that change, who believe in this coaching staff, and then bringing in more guys who will be part of that. And you have to go through that process. I mean, that's the problem is nobody wants to go through that process, but you can't turn it around quickly unless you do, especially when you've been bad for as long as Florida State has. This has been a 4 or 5 year process to get to this point.
Ira, you just had mentioned a couple minutes ago Florida State going to Boston College and getting waxed. And I remember watching that game. That was, 35-3 off the top of my head. It was like that. But the score wasn't as indicative of the effort, or in this particular case, the lack thereof. And you watch that game that night, and you're like, man, Florida State looks like they just don't even want to be there. It was cold. BC was hitting them in the mouth. They didn't want to compete. And it was just the absolute opposite of what you expect with the brand of Florida State football. I mentioned the West Durham last hour. I don't know how many games are going to win down the stretch. They may not win any. They may go 0-4. But what I do want to see from Florida State is effort. And find out which kids did buy in, and now let's go play them. Now, they may not be talented enough to beat, you know, NC State or obviously a Clemson or something along those lines. But I think you just want to find out who wants to be a player. right? I think that's the one thing with Mike Norvell. And again, they may go 0-4 down the stretch, but I just want to see Florida State compete. And, you know, if you get the win, awesome. If you don't, that's okay. That's part of the build back factor. I think that's the one thing that I've watched Florida State a couple times this year, especially that game at Louisville, when you're thinking, man, they just turned the corner. They beat North Carolina. They go to Louisville and just got punked. I mean, that was just a let's just get out of here kind of game. And I was like, wow, what is going on here? So to me, as a fan, I just want to see them get after it, whether they win the game or lose, or whatever the case may be. But I think you got to see that coming down the stretch if you're Mike Norvell.
I agree 100%. And, you know, as fans or media, we may not be able to tell you how to whether or not guys are using proper fundamentals during a zone blitz or whether all the assignments are. But we can tell effort. We can all see whether or not guys are competing. And to your point, that Boston College game was so troubling because it was right out the gate. You could tell during pregame warmups, nobody on that team wanted to be there, including, I think, quite frankly, some of the coaches. This is with this team, it's been other than the Louisville game, I do think they went into that very overconfident because of what they did against North Carolina, and they got slapped in the face and didn't respond. But I think what you see mostly from this team this season, we saw it against Pitt, is when things are going well, they will play with great effort. Where they don't handle situations well in terms of effort or certainly execution is once things start going poorly, they completely fall apart. And I think that is part of the process, but I think it would be a much worse sign if they were just coming out flat every week, not inspired. I think they are. They want to do the right thing. Where this team really lacks, fortitude is when things start going poorly. And I think that's one of the top objectives for this coaching staff is get to a point where these guys can fight through some of those rough stretches.
All right. Irish O'Fell covers Florida State for warchant.com. Thank you, my man. Always great to have you with us.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
BC, Notre Dame. We have talked about history, tradition, upsets, crazy streaks. Who better to break it down than the voice of the BC Eagles, our buddy John Mita Perrell. Flash, what's happening? Oh, well, where'd he go? Oh. Pick left. Pick left. Go right. Maytag repairman pulled the plug
lost
on him.
Lost our signal.
Just like that.
Somebody came in to repair a coil in the dishwasher, and we lost our signal.
Yep.
He was going to do
the shot from his home right there. The Maytag repairman tripped over the curb and knocked Flash right off the air like that. What's up, big man? You doing all right?
I'm doing all right, guys. I just got a tingling sensation watching that David Gordon field goal. You know, that's like the first time Packer ate a glazed Krispy Kreme. I jumped through the roof.
By the way, I do remember – this is funny you should say that because I do remember watching that game. And I was living here in Charlotte, and I was on my awesome Italian sofa, which I don't have anymore. Had a great fire going on, and I was watching that game, and I could not believe that BC pulled it off. But that's what's made this series great, John. You know what? It's just, you know, these two just have a bond, and I'm not just talking about from a religious standpoint. They just kind of have a bond about one another, right? It's one of those gigs. Don't care what you're ranked. We're going to go play you for 60, and I suspect this game Saturday is going to be another fistfight.
Yeah, I think it will be packed. I think it's one of those things where you look back and say, hey, BC's lost 7 straight in the series. But, you know, it doesn't really feel that way. It feels like even though last year was a 33-point loss, you feel like coming into the game, it's going to be a close game. Just because of what you just said, they do have that bond. It is that holy war mentality that BC brings into this game. They're playing for something extra, especially this week with the red bandana game to honor the fallen memory of Wells Crowther. So there's so much on the line, and I do feel good about this. I think a lot of fans from BC feel good about it, and I think Jeff Hafley feels good about it.
John, in some ways, the loss at Clemson, I understand. I mean, the emotion of it and all the disappointment after the game. But then to go to Syracuse and win and not let Clemson beat you twice, I think that tells me more about maybe what his first year is about than had you won at Clemson and then won again the next week. I think the fact you can bounce it back is probably a characteristic he, you know, yeah, he'd love to have the Clemson win, but that's not a bad thing to have last week either.
Oh, no doubt about it, Wes. He told me last night on the coach's show, that's a mentality that they're building. It's a culture that they're building. He calls it the process. He's probably told you guys about that a few times here. And that's something that we haven't seen in the past from BC. Don't let the Clemson loss turn into another loss or another loss after that. They haven't lost consecutive games this year. So that says a lot about this team that was picked 13th out of 15 teams in the ACC in the preseason. It's a mental situation for them, too, now. It's not just talent. They're building that. And I think that's such a credit to Halfley, who I think should be under supreme consideration for Coach of the Year honors.
Totally agree with that. Then you throw in the added dimension of Phil Dracovic, right? Transfers from Notre Dame, gets the opportunity. Finally, the NCAA wakes up just in time to allow him to play this year. And he has been terrific. I mean, he's been out of sight. Notre Dame knows who he is. So from that perspective, there won't be any kind of surprise factor. But again, the Irish are in a different attitude this week, too. I mean, hey, fresh off of beating Clemson, they're now in the forefront, ranked number two in the AP poll. They got to take it on the road. There will not be any fans there. They got to generate their own energy. There's no doubt BC, as you pointed out, red bandana game, going to be absolutely juiced out of mind, ready to roll. It adds to the intrigue of what we're going to see Saturday afternoon.
It does. And I think, you know, I asked him about last night about Halfley about the intel that you might get with Phil Dracovic as a former Irish. Do we overrate that in the media? And he says, yeah, you do. He'd love to tell you that there's a lot, but, you know, it's a new offensive coordinator there in Tommy Rees. I mean, clearly Brian Kelly knows Phil Dracovic, and Phil Dracovic knows Brian Kelly. So maybe they gained a slight edge there, but I think what Dracovic has done, Pack, has stabilized this team. He really has. He wasn't great on Saturday at Syracuse, but did enough. And that's something, again, we haven't seen in the past from BC quarterbacks. So he's brought that steady hand, that leadership ability that they desperately needed at that position. And you guys, you want to streamline this game? It's all about possessing the ball. Wes, you talk about it a lot in your broadcast. Out-possess the other team, you got a great shot. That's really what it comes down to for BC. You have to somehow dominate the line of scrimmage.
Well, that's where I was going, John, because here's the deal. Notre Dame's really good up front. BC's really good up front. We had Alec Lindstrom on yesterday, and not long after that, Pack invited the entire family to Charlotte for a steak on a grill or something. But
steaks.
That's neither
steaks,
here nor there at this
plural,
point.
Plural. No sushi. Yeah. Steaks.
Yeah. but the game to me Saturday becomes about who can run it better. And to be honest, while Notre Dame has shown they can run the ball this fall, John, the history's right there. And 2-6 is starting to round back into form. I mean, David Bailey, welcome to college football in 2020. It looks like that the last two games, he's become kind of the David Bailey we thought we were going to see.
Yeah, he has. And I think the offensive line in general, you go back to the Georgia Tech game when they rolled up 264 yards, that was the coming out party. There's no doubt Bailey's running harder. He's running behind his pads. He's definitely been more tenacious. He's kind of A.J. Dillon-esque the last couple of weeks. 125 against Syracuse. Most carries of the season for him. So, yeah, there's no doubt they're going to be riding him. But another underlying factor here, guys, you look for that X factor. How about Travis Levy coming out of the backfield? He had 117 combined last week against Notre Dame. Another guy that BC can rely upon. Very steady. Doesn't fumble much. Outstanding in pass coverage. He's a guy that they're going to be relying upon, too, on Saturday.
This can be a crazy question, but only you can answer this one. Normally, you get into November, and Boston, which is an incredibly awesome sports town, has got Patriots on the brain. You're probably just fresh off winning the Red Sox, winning another World Series. You know what I'm saying. This particular November, the Patriots stink, and here comes BC Notre Dame. Is Boston, is Beantown buzzing this week for college football more than the NFL?
Oh, that's a tough one, Pack. I think they are to an extent. I think the Patriots rallying to beat the Jets was a monumental win for the New England Patriots. But the joke here in New England is Phil Dracovic is the best quarterback in New England. So, you know, step aside Cam Newton, it's all about Dracovic. So, yes, there is a definite buzz. People are very excited about Halfley, about what he's brought to Chestnut Hill. I have noticed it. Halfley does a weekly or pretty much a weekly shot, not only with me, but with WEEI. He's known as the best interview in Boston now. As you guys know, you have him on all the time. So he's brought that added juice that they need. So there's definitely, yeah, it's a shame that 45,000 won't be at Alumni Stadium. We all know that. But you know what? BC will definitely grab center stage. Their audience on ESPN was, what, 5 million a couple weeks ago against Clemson? So that's pretty good.
Meter, when you look at kind of where this fits in Halfley's first year, sure you'd want to win the game. Anybody would. You mentioned, you know, Coach of the Year. This has been an overwhelming success for Jeff Halfley, though. I mean, I don't know what happens the rest of the regular season, and I'm almost beginning to believe it certainly doesn't matter because he's put the core together to be successful there, don't you think?
Absolutely, Wes. I mean, when you think about what he's done here, just, you know, I think we were all kind of worried about that whole culture thing and what it means. I think Steve Adazio did a really nice job, and these are his players. There's no doubt about that. But Jeff Halfley's building around that, too, to recruit a top 10 class. 2022, they're already in the top 10 by a lot of recruiting services. So, yeah, of course, there's going to be a lot of great things to come. He certainly has built this program in 1 year, has done much more than we all thought he could do. He's a creative mind. He gives them the stability that they needed on the sideline. He doesn't coach with his hair on fire. He does a lot of good things. He's brought in a terrific staff. Think about his defensive coordinator, Tim Lukabu, offensive coordinator, Frank Signetti, both guys with NFL backgrounds. So many good things to come. It's a great time to be a BC football fan.
By the way, I noticed that the lights are out in your kitchen. You know, right over your right shoulder is the fuse box. Do you want to get up and just check the fuse box just to make sure that everything's okay in the kitchen? I'm concerned for you out there in Boston.
I don't cook much, Pac, so I think I'm good. I think I could go dark for a while. Yeah. I will check it for you. Maybe, you know, we'll get John in there from one of your old favorite shows, you know, Three's Company, and we'll check it out.
Three's Company. We're going to go 70s reference in this interview?
I mean, well, that's your era.
Oh, yeah, of course. No doubt. You know, I could tell also
it
over
is.
Your shoulder.
That's right. That's exactly right, Meter.
Yeah. Three's Company.
He's 70s. Yeah. He's 70s all the way.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Absolutely. And by the way, I can also tell over your right shoulder, it looks like way back in the distance, there's a microwave. Do you know how to operate that thing? I'm just curious.
That's the one thing I do know how to do. You know, my Ithaca College degree allowed me to press 1 and 2 and 3, so I can figure out how to warm up for a minute or two. That's one thing I can do. I can reheat Chinese food. I can reheat pizza. Right, Wes?
Yeah.
You know, I'd really like for the room raider on Twitter to get a shot of Meter's background if we could and see if we could get some kind of grade on that because the room raider on Twitter has not handed out a 1 in a long time. Matt Park was on this show one time, our buddy Matt Park from Syracuse, who looked like he was coming to us from some federal penitentiary, some sort of room where he was being questioned. But you've upgraded a little bit. I mean, although I am waiting on you to step back to the old Frigidaire there and, you know, pull out an orange juice in the morning to get started.
Can I get you guys a nice tea?
You know what? I don't want your iced tea. You know why? Let me just say something. And if this offends somebody, I really don't care. The folks in the Northeast don't know anything about iced tea. You know, when you live in the South, let me tell you something. When you live in the South, we have iced tea. You folks in the Northeast, have no idea what iced tea is. You really don't. I have no clue.
Well, if you say sweet tea up here, that can get you thrown in jail.
Yeah, well, let me think. Hey, listen, there's things up in the Northeast that are better than the South, but iced tea is something you folks have no clue about. None. So don't reach in for any iced tea. I'll pass.
Agree.
I'll pass on that.
You win there, Packer. Yeah. You win. Right. Absolutely.
You got it.
All right, real quick, Steven wanted us to check in on you. How was your trip to Central New York last week? How'd you do? You got out on the road.
Trip was
you
good.
Boys have a little bit of a journey. Yeah.
We always have a journey. The good thing is my broadcast partner, Pete Cronin, he drove up. I drove back. Cronin gives good New York State throughway, though. His stories will take you through anything. He's got a million of them. I've heard a million plus. But they're still good. Like the 10th time you hear it, pretty good. He makes you laugh.
Plus, you did dinosaur barbecue in Syracuse, right?
Of course. Ooh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. What's a Syracuse trip without dinosaur?
Yeah, I got to give props to John Waldhack, the AD at Syracuse, because he bragged about it. I was like, yeah, okay, we'll tuck it. You know, we'll
converted pack.
Okay, and let me tell you something. It's legit. It's the real deal. It's good.
It's legit.
All right. Best to tell Mutrin and Pete hello. All the best. Thanks as always.
That was a Mutrin highlight you guys just showed, by the way. Handing the ball off to Mike Cloud 4 straight times.
Yeah.
He still has nightmares.
Scotty wanted to keep it on the boot. Hey, Scotty wanted to keep it on the bootleg, and they wouldn't let him touch it, would they?
That was brutal. Yeah, he still has nightmares about that one. But you know what, guys? It's going to be a heck of a game on Saturday.
I think you're right.
Oh, there we go.
Like.
We're punting it out. Yeah. Come on. We're going for the win.
At the last second, we got a little pom-pom action going there. We got the rah-rah going.
Yeah,
I like it.
We got a little, throw it out there on the broadcast.
That was fresh off a Jeff Hafley radio show that, hey, coach has got me convinced we got something up our sleeve for a Saturday afternoon at Chestnut Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
I love it.
Did you expect anything less, Packer? Did you expect anything less? Yeah. Hey, did you expect anything less from the Flash Boy, though, Pack? Be honest. Did you expect anything less from Flash Boy?
I've known him since the 70s.
Stop. That's it. We're done.
We watched Three's Company today.
Stay safe.
Yeah, we go way back.
No, stay safe. Yeah, if you guys bring up Norman Fell, I'm out of here.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Valentin Nowell will be making his debut in about 10 minutes. And if you don't know who that is, you should, because he was my notepad ACC player of the month in October. Led the country in scoring. Soccer. Pitt, number one. We'll get into all that stuff, though, coming up, so hang tight. But, Wes, we've got a little football conversation that we're going to do here, and this is a healthy debate because this is a difficult, difficult topic that we're getting ready to address.
Yeah, if you're going to select the best position group in the ACC, now you got to think all 15 schools. And where would you find the best position group? Now, easy say quarterbacks, right? Here comes the quarterback how do we measure the quarterbacks? What are you looking at? We got all these different guys. You got Trevor Lawrence, Sam Howell, De'Eriq King,
Ian Book,
DJ Uiagalelei. Ian Book. I mean, you know, go on and on. Malik Cunningham, high percentage passer. Phil Jurkovec. I mean, you can go on and on and on, right? Kenny Pickett. Is that the best position group in the ACC? Maybe it's defensive linemen, right, Pack? You got Boogie Basham. You got Patrick Jones. You've got you just start thinking down the line here, right? You run into guys. Is it linebackers? Is it safeties? Tight ends? Hunter Long, Will Mallory, Brevin Jordan. You start thinking about that group, right? So really – 844-SAY-ACCN. Is it running backs? How many combinations of running backs have we talked about, Mark?
Yep.
I mean, it's a pretty good conversation.
And I think that if you try to address this topic as if you had a vote for all ACC and you said, okay, all right, who am I going to put at quarterback, running back? You pick a position here. There are a couple position groups that are absolutely impossible where you're going to have to leave off a handful of dudes and go, man, how do I not have fill in the blank as running back or wide receiver or quarterback? This is the voting process that we're kind of talking about. And you know, when you start rattling through and doing a little bit of homework on this topic, you realize this particular year, this year, 2020 ACC football, said it before the season, I'm going to say it again, Wes, here in the middle of November. It's as talented a group as I can remember in this league in terms of big-time players at so many different positions, much less the depth this year. The depth this year in the ACC is as good as it's been in a long, long time. And I would still say the quarterback's the hardest one, because it's so deep. But, man, you try to tell me who the two best running backs are right now in the ACC. Tell me who the two best tight ends are in the ACC. I'm telling you, this is hard to do in the middle of November.
All right. I'm going to run off five names in the ACC of running backs that are gaining 100 or more yards a game right now. Okay?
Okay.
Javian Hawkins, Khalil Herbert, Javonte Williams, Kyren Williams, Michael Carter are the two best running backs in the ACC in that five?
That's a great point. I mean, you did not mention Travis Etienne.
I did not mention Travis Etienne. I did not mention Kenneth Walker. I did not mention Christian Beal-Smith.
Right.
I did not mention Mateo Durant and Deion Jackson, who are also in the top 10.
Right. I'm telling you, it's hard. This is one of those impossible topics, and why we're jumping on it is probably our fault, but it gives you something to talk about. And I think it also goes back, though, to why this year was so important for the ACC to play. This is one of those special years. I mean, and I think the quarterback room, I said it before the year, I'll say it again. Nobody in the country has a better collection of quarterbacks than the Atlantic Coast Conference. They have better and more of them than everybody else anywhere you want to look.
Don't disagree with that. But I'll add to the mix on this. We've talked about tight ends. We've talked about quarterbacks. We've talked about running backs. How are you going to pick the two best wide receivers in this league?
You can't. That's the answer to the question.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. How about this? There are two players in the ACC that are in the top five in receptions per game and in the top five in three players in the top five receptions per game and the top 5 yards per game. Do you care to know who the three are?
Well, nobody's going to mention the dude from Virginia, Mr. Kemp, right? You know that's going to be probably flying underneath the radar, be my guess.
Still leads the league in receptions per game at 7.5, Billy Kemp.
Yep.
He's got 45 catches in 6 games. But Jordan Addison,
freshman,
Amari Rodgers, and Tutu Atwell are in the top 5 in receptions per game and receiving yards per game. And we're supposed to pick two?
Can't do it.
And, oh, by the way, look, I think Amari Rodgers, just my opinion, okay? Amari Rodgers has been, down in and down out, Clemson's most productive player, okay? The last 2 games that Trevor Lawrence didn't play, Amari Rodgers made game-changing, but certainly productive plays almost every time he touched the ball, okay? To the point where I think when you look at Rodgers as a senior, he's almost, I'm not going to say he's a lock first-team All-ACC, but he's got to be close because plays on arguably one of the best teams, and he is productive on one of the best teams. I think All-ACC balloting, and I know you don't vote, I think it's going to be a nightmare. I really do. I think it's going to be a root canal for the people that do vote. I really do. I think the running back situation, the wide receiver situation, the tight end situation, all going to be very, very difficult.
I'm with you. Totally agree. That's why we bring it up now while we've got another, hopefully, knock on wood, 4 or 5 weeks of games left to be played before we get to a championship game December the 19th. But the league is very talented, and I think you're going to find that out when the NFL draft gets cranked up in 21. But just the quarterback play alone, I think, has elevated the conference this particular year. And we're going to find out if momentum can carry into next year and years down the road. Now, we're kind of this boat, I think, back in 2016, Wes, where Clemson wins the national title, Lamar Jackson wins the Heisman, and there was that buzz about, okay, now what did the ACC do? Could they validate the next year and the next couple of years? Clemson did, but I'm not sure anybody else did. So I'm kind of curious moving forward. I don't know how the rest of this year will turn out, but I really am kind of fascinated to see what happens in 21 if the ACC validates the quality of play this particular year.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
coming up top of the hour. Danny Cannell will join us, Mark Herzlich as well in the Power Hour. But right now, we're going to go with my guy. This was my guy. We do Notepad every month. We look back, and this guy who we're getting introduced, he's never been on before, was my offensive player of the month. And I'm not just talking about for soccer. I'm talking about every sport known to man in the ACC. Valentin Noel joins us. Valentin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm good.
Awesome having you on. And, man, what a year you and your Pitt soccer team are having, huh? I mean, you can't script a better case scenario how this thing's laid out so far.
Yeah, actually, we enjoy every time, every second of the game and what we can do on the pitch. It's really good so far.
I'd say.
It's been a unique year, Valentin. I mean, obviously with the pandemic and things like that, and I know we talked to a lot of coaches in the month of June and July, and they were trying to make sure they got everybody back. Guy who lives in France, like you're from France, you try to get back, you're trying to adjust to the pandemic. So how awkward and how different has this fall campaign been for you?
Yes, I agree for sure. It has been really, really different. We struggled a lot to bring the team back all together. And from March, when I first had to go back home to quarantine in France, then work out alone, then I had to make sure I can come back in the United States, the borders, everything. So everything has been really, really different, and we had to follow all the protocols, everything. So yeah, it has been really, really weird and awkward. Even when we were training, like wearing the mask all the time, the fact that we had still the opportunity to play, we enjoy it every second, and we are really, really grateful for that.
Now, you lead the nation in goals per game. You're a sophomore. You're from France. How in the world did you end up at Pittsburgh?
I'm second. I'm second. I'm not first. But I stayed in France in the same club and in the same city for 10 years, and I just felt it was the right time to leave. I wanted to discover something new, discover a new language, meet new people, etc. And I just felt it was the right time. And I knew some players who were playing college soccer while they were keep studying. And that interested me a lot, and that's what I wanted to do. And I guess I made the right choice.
Now, let me ask you something. Back home in France, do they know how big a deal you are? Because, we've had so many international student-athletes on the show. It's always interesting to me, the different cultures and so forth. And listen, the world's gotten smaller and smaller. But do your buds back home in France realize how great you're doing in Pittsburgh?
I don't know. I mean, some of my friends follow me through Instagram or Twitter, and they see, like, some highlights when I score some stuff, but I don't know. You know, with the time difference as well. I mean, I didn't do anything yet. I'm like just scoring some goals, and I need to bring trophies and win trophies with my team first, and then we're gonna be able to talk.
I don't like it.
For sure. My best friends like are following me for sure.
That's great. But I like your answer that, hey, listen, it's not about me. It's about us as a team winning a championship. And when you do that, then everybody will take notice. The attitude's out of sight.
Yeah, for sure. That's all we want. That's like it was hard times when we were not be able to play, when we were quarantined, working out alone. And that was one of our main motivation. Like, hey, okay, we are having a really hard time, but let's do what we can. Let's make it better, and let's try to chase trophies, because that's all that matters.
Valentin, in where you're from, I think it's Niort, right? In Western France, is that right?
Yes.
What there's all levels of soccer. In fact, I think you have a club team, a League Two squad in Niort, if I'm not mistaken. Now, what's the dynamic to come to the U.S.? I know you talked about the cultural experience and new languages and things like that. I'm going to guess you were playing soccer competitively over there. How did the University of Pittsburgh find out about you and you them, I guess?
So yeah, as I said, I was playing at Niort. So I was training with the professional team, but I was playing with the B team. And mm-hmm. and yeah, the main objective was to of course try to get professional. And I guess I didn't. I was not good enough, I guess. And then it was all about finding something new and move forward. And I just saw the opportunity. As I said, I knew some players who were playing college soccer, so I made everything possible. I built my case. I built my file. And then I received an email from the University of Pittsburgh. Telling me that they were interested about me because I sent like a video montage of some of my games, and yeah, that's all. And then I had a mini calls with Michael Behonix, and they were like all really nice with me, and just because at that time a year ago my English was terrible, and they were very very patient with me, and I just felt like a family environment, and it already matched it.
Well, your English is great, by the way, for somebody who just jumped on board. Mm-hmm. So congratulations on that front too. So you make the adjustment to campus life at Pitt. Now I want you to be honest with me on this. What's the one thing about us Americans that you sit there and maybe it's a food, maybe it's a drink. I don't know. You tell me that you're still having a hard time adjusting going, you know what? I just don't get about these folks over here in the U.S. of A. Those French fries don't taste like our French fries. Whatever it is, you tell me. What's the one thing about campus life that you just, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make that adaptation to living like in America does over here?
I have different things, but the main one is why you guys put always ice in the water everywhere. It can be so cold outside, so warm, whatever. In the restaurant or whatever, ice inside the water. I'm like, why?
That is great.
But that's one little thing. But also the air conditioning all the time. It's always cold inside the rooms. But that's it. No, otherwise, it's a great country, and I enjoy every second I'm here. And yeah, that's it.
That's funny. You know what's funny? The last and actually the only time I've ever visited Paris, I mean, it's so funny you should say that, because every meal, if I ordered a Coke, no ice. If I ordered water, no ice. I'd be like, man, what's up with this? Well, what's wrong with these folks? We got to put some ice in these drinks, right? So it's the fact that you say, oh, you folks over here putting those ice cubes and putting that AC on all the time, and you got to check that out. So it's so funny you should say that, because you're spot on. 100% right.
Valentin, take us through there. You're one of several foreign players on the Pitt soccer roster. That's got to be comforting to know, right? I mean, you've got some shared kindred spirit a little bit, and guys that have come a long way to play college soccer in the U.S., right?
You mean like I'm kind of confused with your question. Sorry.
You've got other foreign. There are other foreign players. There are other guys internationally who have come to okay. Pittsburgh to play soccer. That's got to be a comforting thing, right?
Oh, that's really cool. Like, we have a lot of different culture, and it's really fun to like even hear many languages in the locker room. Of course, we all speak English on the field, and we try to all speak the same language playing soccer. But it's really fun to have different culture, different way to live. Some people, I don't know, the way they break. I mean, some people eat breakfast at different time, for example. Like, it's just really, really good. Like, we enjoy it, and it's fun to have friends from many different countries.
So cool. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. We ask this question to every student athlete that comes on the show. Valentin, what has been the hardest class that you've had at Pittsburgh?
That I took or what I'm going to take? Because I'm going to take one really hard class.
What is that?
Business calculus.
Oh. Yeah, that's a West Durham
mathematics
special. Yeah, that's
tough. That's a big one.
Yeah, that's a West Durham classic right there. Before we let
we wish you a lot of luck in that. We wish.
Before we let you go, before we let you go, I would be remiss if I don't ask you this. If you could end this interview giving us a promo by saying you're watching Packer and Durham in French.
Oh, vous êtes en train de regarder. Oh, what is the name?
Packer and Durham.
Vous êtes en train de regarder Packer and Durham.
There you go. I love it. Love it. Well, listen, congratulations, man. You're a great story.
Thank you very much.
Your team has been out of sight. We got the championships coming up over the weekend and all that good stuff. And I hope we can get you back. And again, congratulations on all your success.
Thank you very much, guys.
You got it.
Have a good day.
You too.
Take
care.
Valentin Noel from the University of Pittsburgh. That was awesome.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.